greetings to each one gathered here this morning, and trust that as we continue in this service, we can be edified and strengthened. To introduce the message this morning, I invite you to turn to Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. We want to read a verse or two there. Maybe I'll read the first two verses of this time. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, he says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. About 2 months ago, I was asked to bring a message along the lines of, well, I guess the title they gave me that time was Practical Nonconformity. For a title this morning, you could simply say nonconformity or thoughts on nonconformity. And I guess one of the things that was interesting to me as I studied into that, even such a simple thing as the meaning of the word practical, I guess I came up with a little different definition than I've thought of. Number one, it's practical means having to do with action or practice rather than thought or theory. And I think as we think of nonconformity, that thought fits very well. Is it nonconformity if it's only a theory or a thought and we actually don't put it into practice? And we know what the word, we talk about nonconformity, and I think this verse here probably is the one of the main scripture verses that we can look at where we are taught not to be conformed to this world. And it raises some questions in our minds, perhaps, why should we not be conformed to this world? You know, we do know there are people around that we might say are nonconformists. They don't fit the whole thing of not conforming. It's a refusal to conform. And it's also interesting if you look in the dictionary that it comes up. One of the definitions under nonconformity is a failure or refusal to conform to an established church. That actually comes up in Webster's. Now like I mentioned, you can use the term nonconformity in a broad sense. A person who is a nonconformist seeks to be different than the normal or the general rule of whatever group you're looking at. And perhaps when you think about nonconformity, you start thinking about dress, and that is part of it, but we're going to look at more than just that this morning. I want to, hopefully we get practical, and sometimes when we look at those things, perhaps toes get stepped on, and perhaps my own, I'm not sure, but are we open, are we willing to take an honest look at what nonconformity is, and what it looks like? When you think about this subject, it makes you go back and perhaps consider some historical things that played into perhaps where we are today. And I guess another way to be practical about it is if we understand it's for each one of us. It's not just for a person here and there, it's for all of us to be involved and be nonconformed to this world. Some of the thoughts that came up, I believe recently Brother Aaron was talking there about the plain suit. I believe he used the verses in Numbers 15 where God commanded the children of Israel to put this marking of blue on their garments. And I think one of the reasons God gave them that direction, I believe, was to He wanted them to have that marking on their clothing to help them remember who they were as a people. that they were his people. And it seems, if you read that passage there, it also was a reminder of God's commandments and the importance of keeping God's commands. And as they obeyed that, it was holiness to them. And actually, one of the things God commanded them back in that time was circumcision, the thing that created a problem further down the road. But the whole thing of conformity or nonconformity, I think there is something within most people. Well, perhaps people like to take it to the extreme. Either they don't want to conform or they want to be a extreme radical one way or the other. There's something within man's heart, I think, that lends itself to that at times. But there are also those that are very concerned about conforming to whatever the pressure they feel coming in their life. There's also an interesting take from Old Testament history in the matter of Israel having a king. You know, God wanted them to be a different kind of people. And one of the reasons, well, in Deuteronomy, it talks about them being like no other people on earth, not because of their greatness, but because of the law that God gave to them, the decrees, the precepts, the commands God wanted them to live by. That was their holiness and that was their greatness as they lived in that way. But we go through their history and repeatedly they are failing. And in 1 Samuel, maybe let's turn to that and read that. We have the matter of the king thing coming up, and the Israelites were wanting to be like the nations around them. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, we have the matter coming up. We know this was when Samuel would have been the prophet, and he was just prior to Saul being made the first king. And we have in verse 4, we have the elders of Israel gathering themselves together and coming to Samuel and saying, "Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee. For they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." So as they had this desire to be like the other nations, and in chapter 8, Samuel tries to remind them all the negative aspects of having a king, what he will take from them, taxation and such like, military service of their young men. But it's coming down to verse 19 and 20, they still refused and said, "We will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations." It seems that was one of their predominant thoughts in this whole thing. They wanted to be like the other nations. And I guess you can question, you know, was that a good desire or not? God did tell Samuel to hearken to them, but we know that perhaps it was not his, well, we know he allowed that to happen. It's the historical record of the way the people of Israel, one thing in their history. And I mentioned before that thought of coming from Deuteronomy, how they were to be a people, a special people unto God. And like I said, it was not in themselves, but it was in God, the one that gave them their decrees. And there was some tremendous manifestations of God's power and glory there when he gave the law there on Mount Sinai. And of course, only one generation or so saw that, a few generations, and it needed to be passed down by word of mouth. And that is not where we find ourselves today. We don't live according to Old Testament law, but time has progressed and we have come into the New Testament era where we go by the teachings of Jesus and the epistles of the apostles. That is where we find direction, specific, practical direction for life today. And yet I do not want to, there still is tremendous benefit in the Old Testament scripture. It actually is where the framework, the groundwork, the foundation out of which the gospel message comes. And it was all because it was God's doing. That's why there were aspects in the tabernacle and temple worship that were pointing forward to Jesus, the perfect Lamb, the one that would come. So we come into the New Testament. I already read Romans 12, and like I mentioned, that is a very predominant or important verse as we consider the matter of nonconformity to this world. Perhaps we ask the question sometimes, does it matter? Does it matter if we are... Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. I think in these verses they show us one of the large reasons for nonconformity and not being like the world. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, looking at verse 16. Just prior to this, in verse 14 and 15, we have teaching on the unequal yoke. And breaking in the last three verses, it says, "What agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. And I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." I think verse 17 there. God's desire is that as his people today, we would not be tainted by the uncleanness that is in the world. We are told to take the light to the world, but there are some factors that play into that, where it is okay to go and in what way that we go among the world. We do know that in Jesus' high priestly prayer, he prayed that they would be kept from the evil, because God's church is in the world, but we are not to be of the world. There's a lot of uncleanness. We live in a fallen world. We are all aware of that. And I think the nonconformity, not being conformed to this world, God calls us to a higher calling, like it says in Romans there, to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. So it does not work to be walking with the world, or drawing closer, going worldward. And as you think of some of the practical matters, well, one more verse I think that comes up as we consider that. Another reason why we need to stay away from the uncleanness and the fallen world is Ephesians chapter 2 explains to us who holds sway in this world. And in verse 2 of chapter 2, it says, "Wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience." And it says there, we all had our conversation there in time past, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us. And verse 5 talks about being quickened or being made alive. God brought us from that place, and he can bring other people from that place as well. The gospel message is for all. But as you think about the subject of nonconformity and not being a part of this world system, We need to firmly grasp the fact that the prince of the power of the air is the one who is currently holding sway among his followers, among the unregenerate society of this world. And you can go back to the historical record of the children of Israel. How did it go with them when they got too close to the heathen nations? Again and again, they were drawn away from God and fell into idolatry and apostasy. And we should not think that we are somehow different. That same principle continues down through that if we fail in the matter of nonconformity, which sometimes is also referred to as the thought of separation, and you can also broaden that out, oftentimes we think perhaps of nonconformity and non-resistance as two things that go together that often will rise and fall, will fall together if groups are departing from biblical doctrine and practice. In Romans chapter 8, it talks about we are called predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. You know, that is the thing that we are to be conformed to, the image of Jesus Christ himself. And that stands in direct opposition to being conformed to the image of this world. And it's one of the things perhaps I raise it as a question. Can we be neutral in that matter? Can we somehow, if we try to find neutrality, we will be trending one way or the other. And thinking about the matter of nonconformity, nonconform to fads and fashions, where do we find ourselves? And as you think of this whole subject, it helps perhaps to think back over years gone by. You know, you can go all the way back and wonder, how did nonconformity look in the early church? Do we really know? We know they weren't dressing necessarily like we do, more of a Middle Eastern culture, no doubt. Was there anything in dress that stood out as different back in that era of time? And you can also add the thing of culture. Different parts of the world have different practices. What does nonconformity look like in those places? And today, we face, in every age of time, I believe there is the test that God's people face. What are we going to be pressured? What mold are we going to fit? Are we going to fit into the mold of the world? And we probably all hear enough of debating, enough of thoughts. When it comes to our appearance or our dress, we talk about attire, and it goes further than that. Our personal appearance, you could say, every part of our personal appearance is saying something, and it gives a message. And we often hear the debate, you know, over dress versus spiritual life within. What is the proper balance of all that? And does a failure of a person who has a form, a very strong form, but fails, like for example, if you've ever seen a plain person smoking a cigarette, what kind of message does that send? Is that a mixed signal or not? Does what he is doing fit with his appearance? And perhaps it's easier for us to see inconsistencies in other groups. Can we see them in our own? can, or it's easier to see in our brother, perhaps in our own personal life, the inconsistencies are most hardest to see right at home. And it's going to be something else. But I would ask the question, if we see something like that, what is the problem? Is the problem the clothes he's wearing, or is it his heart? And perhaps some of the problem we get ourselves into, we react against those kind of failures, as it were, or what we see. There's a lot of reaction to that kind of thing, and then we can go into the ditch of saying it's only the heart that really matters. But like I said, the problem was not the clothes, it was the heart. I guess I could ask the question, you know, is it possible to overemphasize nonconformity? And I would say only if we think it is all external, the outside. And yet I believe it will come out. If the heart is truly cleansed, it will show on the outside. It will show from the inside out. I think that thought came up Wednesday evening, perhaps. That's the way God works. He doesn't do a reformation. He does a transformation in our life, in our heart. And I would say sometimes from thoughts I hear, I wonder how much we're being influenced by Protestant teaching. And we know some of that can be very close to right doctrinally, and yet we know that when it comes to the matter of nonconformity, it isn't there. There's none of it there, as well as some other false doctrines like unconditional eternal security, which in essence is saying that it doesn't even matter how I live. If I am a child of God and am saved, then I'm forever saved. And no, we believe that what we do in practical matters does matter. What we do in this matter of nonconformity, are we conforming to the world? Or are we not? Or how much? Recently, I've been reading through the book, The Cup and the Cross, and that's not a book I ever went through before, but some Anabaptist history, and it was intriguing to me as I was thinking about it in relation to this subject, that there were false teachers that showed up saying that the Anabaptists faced a tremendous amount of persecution for practical matters, that they would not conform to the dictates of the state church at that time. And I'm there again. Some of you may know that history a lot better than I do, but I think swearing of oaths was one that they got themselves in trouble with. They would show themselves up as for who they were. But some of the false teachers would say, promote the theory that you can be a Christian in your heart, you know, in spite of what you're doing. Just go ahead and be a Christian quietly and non-obtrusively. Don't make trouble. And some of the leaders had to speak out against some of those false teachings. But do we understand why that becomes a temptation? There is a price with nonconformity. Are we willing to pay that price? Like I mentioned, every era of time faces it in different ways, perhaps, and every generation has to choose what to do with it. And I'm not going to say it's going to look exactly the same from generation to generation. There is change, but sometimes I hear people stand up and talk about the change that has come, and I wonder, how do they know it wasn't just them? Is change, you know, I understand change in this world is something we cannot get away from, but how much is it change of our position and where we stand? As I was studying for this, there was also a church periodical that had an evaluation on the apostasy in the old Mennonite church. And I think that is before my time. I had to think approximately 60 years ago is when some of these things, events were happening. And I think my father's generation would have seen that as young people, some of the sifting and some of the change and some of the happening as groups withdrew from the conference as they were apostatizing, and people that stayed with the conference at that time lost all separation, all nonconformity from the world, in appearance for sure, but I'm sure it goes deeper than that as well. I'd just like to read a little bit from this article that was written. I think it speaks very well to this matter of nonconformity. It says, the world's methods and ways of thinking were welcomed and copied. They were just a few steps behind the world. They did not consider whether the changes they made conformed them to Christ or to the world. And again, you could ask the question, if we're traveling the same direction, just behind, not quite where the world is, we're no better. Which way are we traveling? Are we turning around from the world and traveling toward Christ? And I think that is a key thing. We need to consider, if we're looking to make changes, or if we're continuing to practice what we always have, we need to put it all to the test. Is this conforming us to Christ, or is it conforming us to the world? Which way are we traveling? And of course, that process happens, you could say, gradually. Sometimes it happens rather fast, alarmingly fast. But the writer here says, first they started to think like the world, then they began to dress like the world, and finally they lived and acted like the world. And just think about that. And after they got to that point, it says, one person looking over Mennonite congregation where plain nonconformed dress had been lost, asked the question, if this is the church, then where is the world? Just some sobering thoughts for us to think on. Also talks about the generation gap. And I know as a very young child, I remember one man in our congregation talking about the difference or the gap between what is taught and what is practiced, and that you probably cannot get away from that totally. But when that becomes extreme, it becomes a huge problem. It says many churches held a double standard. The standard practices of past years were still in the church's written discipline. Some of the older people and a few of the more conscientious members had convictions on these matters and conformed to these standards. And the progression gets worse and worse as you go down that street. As the gap between what the church taught and the way most of the members lived widened, the church adjusted its teaching to the level of the members' practice. And there's another, I would say, dangerous precedent. And does any of this sound familiar? Is this all things that don't matter? One other thing that stood out to me, it brings up the influence of the radio and television. It says their minds were filled with what they were seeing and hearing on their modern communication devices. And sounds a little interesting if you consider that was 60 years ago, and we would say that's some antiquated method of, that's an antiquated thing, what they had 60 years ago. I think we are all well aware what we're dealing with now is further down the road. Modern communication devices, what do we have in that? What effect? I guess the question I would raise for you to consider is, what effect is that having on us? Is it affecting our thinking? Is it causing us to think more like the world? There is that influence. If you read the booklet that we have written up, the decrees, it talks about our desire is that we keep it as a tool and not a toy. Or there's also the entertainment that is ever present or close at hand, and we need to make a choice on that. What are we doing with entertainment on it? just mention a few thoughts from Article 4 here in our book. It's entitled Separation and Nonconformity, and the verse Romans 12:2 there about be not conformed to this world is used. The first thing it talks about the Lord's Day and some observances related to that, mentions funerals very briefly, a statement or two. It goes on to automobiles. And the verse used in under that is that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. And number four, of course, is Christian attire. That's a more lengthy one. But coming down to letter C, it says Christian dress shall not be conformed to fads and fashions. And another question I'll throw out for you to consider, is there a difference between fads and fashions in the church versus in the world? Is one better than the other? I mean, think about it. Fads and fashions, it says we're to be non-conformed. Where are the fads and fashions coming from? Well, I think if you boil it all down, it's coming from a carnal heart, probably, if you want to just be that frank about it. As you think of this whole subject, are we finding our way in the present age, in the present tests that we face? Like I mentioned, that whole thing of the conservative regroupings and understanding what they were pulling out of is a few generations in the past. And I guess just recently I heard a discussion of more in the business side of things, which you've probably heard this before, that the first generation understands the sweat and the toil and the hardship it took to gain some ground against all odds, against all opposition. And the thought often is that the second generation can maintain it and the third generation will squander it. And I just recently heard that discussion not long ago, and then I started to just think about that in the context of some of the church, the historical church, what has happened in the, where are we at? How well are we holding it? And like I said, it's not like it has to be the exact same everywhere all the time. There is some room for diversity, and yet are we really heeding the teaching of Scripture to not be conformed to this world? Well, I was going through here, I was at number four, I'm not sure, there's a few more, I guess. No, that's most of what we have in that section of separation and nonconformity. Also goes on a little bit about how we dress our children, but like I mentioned, it's more than just our appearance. It goes into the heart. And it comes out in the places that we go. It affects the places that we go and the things that we do. In other words, you could say it affects our whole lifestyle. And yet we need to be clear that the lifestyle does not save us. But the lifestyle needs to be the result of a transformed mind and a changed life. It's the outworking of that, coming from within. So much more than just what you see, and yet what you see tells us what is on the inside. And I think it's safe and fair to say that it is, the purpose of this is not to just be different, but it is to show that we have been redeemed and separate ourselves from the uncleanness of the world, like the verses there in 2 Corinthians 6 show us. another one of the verses that is used is taken from 1 Peter, I believe. I'm not mistaken on that. There in Peter it talks about not fashioning ourselves according to the former lusts in our ignorance. The thought of fashioning or the things that we do places we go. Is there places that are off limits to us? Well, I think we know that there is, and perhaps one of the things we think of are is the world's entertainment. Just this week, the service person I deal with sent me a message wondering if I need tickets to go to the local fair. No, I looked at it again. He asked if I won any, and then I said, no, I don't need any. I was glad he was asking and not trying to just push him on me, but we don't need that. But if we're going to be consistent with that whole thing, we shouldn't be watching anything of that. Well, like some of the entertainment, perhaps you... If you were here last Sunday, you remember Luke was talking about tractor pulls and things like that. The world's entertainment, whatever it might be. And that's an outworking of nonconformity that we do not go. And it's not like everything happening there is total and out sin. It's not. But the closer we walk to the world, the more we are going to be pulled into that vortex and the downward pull. It's why we need to be nonconformed and separate. There's places that we do not fit in. I had to think of the verse there in 1 Samuel where the question was raised by the Philistine lords. It says, what do these Hebrews here? When David was, that was actually when they were getting ready to go to battle the following day when Saul and his sons were slain. And David was over there in the land of the Philistines and with Achish, king of Gath, and for about a year and 4 months, if I'm not mistaken, and the lords of the Philistines saw that these men were there, and they're like, they raised that question, what do these Hebrews here? And I'm not sure if it was wrong exactly for David to be there, but he stood out as a Hebrew, and he stood out as someone different. And I guess I would say, would people have the right to ask, what do these Mennonites here? If you're going to the world's entertainment, it does not fit in. It does not belong to the separated people of God. There's places we do not belong. I mentioned just a little bit about as men, we tend to be reactionary sometimes. We see inconsistencies, and because of that, we react, but let's be careful we don't go to the ditch on the other side of the road in some of these things. We need to find a practical outworking. Nonconform to the world. Does it enter into business life? You know, Jesus told a parable there about a rich fool tearing down his barns to build something bigger. Is there any present-day application to the lesson we see in that parable? Is it a good thing to build a grand, big, new building for our business? Is it wrong? Is it right? Or how big of a farming operation or a business should we actually have? Or you could ask, what about hiring worldly consultants to advise us how to run that business? How to run or expand it. As Christians, we need to remember our values are different. If we're truly nonconformed to this world and following the teachings of Jesus, there's a difference between what we believe and what those of the world believe. And why? I raise the question, is it okay to sign up for government subsidies or grants and those kind of things? I think it's no secret that some of the largest operations are tapping into government funds to a greater degree than most. As you think of nonconformity, what kind of values are we following this morning? God gives us a choice, as he gives us in many things. But you know, the choice we make ends up, it creates a lifestyle over a period of time, and our lifestyle will determine our destiny in the end. Which way are we trending this morning? And it's probably much easier to talk. What are we doing with the practical decisions we face from day to day? Are we remembering the principle of not being conformed to this world, but being transformed and being more conformed to the image of Jesus himself? And perhaps the surest and the truest way to know where a man is to not necessarily go by his words, but to look and see what he allows in his own family, and that will tell you where he really, really is. I guess I would just like to say the question I trust all of you are considering, at least as much as we are able, and as we gain understanding on it, we need to evaluate the things that we do, or be willing to evaluate them and put them to the test. Which way or what part does this fit in the matter of nonconformity to the world? I trust we're all convinced that it matters a great deal. I would just like to turn to a verse in Revelation 18 here. Revelation 18, we have the judgment of Babylon the Great in focus, and it seems to be talking, the commercial aspect is in focus very much here. If you go down through the chapter, it talks about seeing the people that stood afar off, the kings of the earth, those that were merchants in the sea, those that became wealthy by selling. It seems to represent, perhaps you could say, the zenith or the apex of man's commercial and industrial might. The anti-God spirit and all that goes with it, the spirit of Babylon. It says in verse 4, he says, I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. And he goes on to say that God will reward her double. In the cup that she filled, he's going to give judgment is going to be handed out. It says further down that strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. But I just see a very clear message there in verse 4, the call for God's people to come out of anything to do with the world and fallen humanity and Satan's program. Certainly, we do not want to be partakers of the world's judgment, and if that is true, then we need to be willing to step aside and follow the teaching of the word that we have, this Bible that God has given us as an instruction for life. That is the essence, I believe, of the importance of nonconformity. Not to just be different, but to be one of those that are serious with God and following him, wherever that takes us. Are we willing to pay that price? You know, in our carnality, the old man would love to go with the things that appeal to the flesh, but we need to renounce them. We need to be willing to step away from that and allow ourselves to be clay in the hands of the potter, and he only knows how many times around the wheel it takes till we are yielded to his will. May God bless this to each one of us. Let's kneel for prayer.